This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. Today's podcast is being recorded in the offices of Raider Solutions. Raider creates and maintains technical strategies for businesses of all sizes across the country, as well as right here in Lafayette, functioning as their complete IT department. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. Lafayette Convention and Visitors Commission also provides underwriting for Discover Lafayette. To find out more about our local restaurants, festivals, music scene, and much more, visit LafayetteTravel.com. Our guests today are Claire Cook and Dr. Robert Otan, entrepreneurs and husband and wife. Claire Cook is a dancer, choreographer, teacher, and community collaborator with a deep commitment to dance and the power of the arts to affect change. After a decade of working in New York City, Claire returned to Lafayette in 2016, inspired to invest her time and talent in her hometown's arts community. She's the founder and director of Basin Arts, a collaborative art space in downtown Lafayette, as well as the artistic director of Basin Dance Collective, the professional dance company in residence at Basin Arts. Dr. Robert Otan is a surgeon specializing in minimally invasive and bariatric surgery. He's affiliated with Lafayette General Medical Center and Lafayette General Surgical Hospital. A cum laude undergraduate of UL Lafayette in biology, Dr. Otan earned his Doctor of Medicine degree from the LSU Health Sciences Center in Shreveport. He did his fellowship in minimally invasive and bariatric surgery at Albany Medical Center in Albany, New York, and his residency in general surgery at New York Methodist in Brooklyn. And I'm going to shift gears about the guy behind the MD. Mm-hmm. Robert also owns Acadian Superette on Lamar Street in Freetown, and he's a mean cook from what I've seen on some YouTube videos. He's also a partner in the construction of the Vermilion Lofts on East Vermilion Street in downtown Lafayette, and in Spoonville, a bar and restaurant that recently opened in downtown Lafayette. Claire and Robert, welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, I know this is your first interview together, and there's so much. You could each have an hour of your own time, but I love the dynamic of you both wanting to move back home to Lafayette. Claire, if you remember, we spoke a few years back when I was director of Upper Lafayette Economic Development, and you called me from New York, and you said, "We really want to live either in the downtown area or Upper Lafayette." And I was so pleased that after all your studies that both of you wanted to come back home. So it's a great opportunity to have you both here and let you share your story.
We're really happy to be here.
So you moved back here, you were married in Lafayette in what year?
2014.
Okay.
It'll be almost 5 years this month, in February.
Yeah, well, so happy almost, anniversary.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we can talk about how you two met, because you were telling me you didn't actually date when you were younger. So if you can talk about when you were in high school and all, I assumed you were high school sweethearts. Would you talk about
how we met in pre-K? We went to the same nursery school in Miss Fox.
Yeah,
like at the same neighborhood.
3 years old, we have pictures like
goodness.
The same like Mother's Day program or something like that. But we grew up in the same neighborhood, so we went to all the same schools, literally nursery school, elementary, middle, high school.
You were friendly.
Yeah, we were friends.
She's good friends with my sister Camille. Mm-hmm. They're the same age.
We were right. He was a grade above me.
Was he always a big guy? Like big,
Athletic? Yeah. He and his brother were my ride to school before I got my driver's license. Mm-hmm. I was the shy one in the back of the car.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we were always, knew each other.
Right.
But certainly there was not a romance. Uh-huh. And then into college, I was at LSU. Robert was at UL. And we kind of started hanging out. And then that's how we started dating. And we spent most of our college years dating. Chime in if I'm missing something.
Right. Yeah.
And then it was cool because I think we really connected over our commitment and our passion for what we were hoping to do in life through dance or through medicine. And in college, that's kind of always a time where you have to be really focused, and sometimes your peers or your friends are not always as
not
disciplined.
Very focused,
So I think we really connected over both having like a very specific vision and drive.
Right.
And so we shared that, but then there was a chapter where we had to go off and do that separately.
Yeah.
So we weren't together for as long as we dated, we weren't together the same amount of time.
But you both ended up in New York City.
We both ended up in New York.
Was that by design or just happenstance that your residency
I applied around... I went to med school in Shreveport, and I wanted to... I knew I was going to come back to Lafayette. Uh-huh. I always knew I was going to wind up back in Lafayette.
Family?
Yeah, the family, culture. And I just love it, and Lafayette always did. So I wanted to train elsewhere, and so I applied in some of the bigger, you know, Chicago, New York, Boston, and everything, and I ended up getting my residency in Brooklyn.
Right.
So that's, you know, so we were up there for about a year and a half or 2 years or so before we got back together.
Yeah, I guess I had been there 3 or 4 years by then, grad school, and then just living and working in the city.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, a couple years after Robert was into residency, we, you know, even in New York, you find the people from Louisiana and y'all go to the same Saints party or something like that, you know, so we ended up circling around in similar social groups.
Huh?
Yeah, and it was kind of cool because I think we had really taken time apart and we had pursued and started like some major headway on those individual goals. Mm-hmm. So when we came back together, it was almost like this new...
That's great.
This new relationship where you felt like you were sharing this whole new chapter, like, oh, and there were so many things that I got to do, and now you want to share and, like, connect those things in a newer, more mature place.
Now, Robert, your residency took quite a while, right?
It was 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you really, that was a commitment.
Yeah, well, I always knew, you know, 5 years is how long it takes. I was lucky to get into med school right after college, you know, Sometimes it takes a little longer. You got to go to grad school before you get in and everything. So I was praying that I would get in after college, and luckily I did. So I went to med school in Shreveport, and then just went to, you know, I didn't take any gap years or anything like that. So I just went right through. And then a 1 year fellowship in Albany in bariatric surgery.
How did you pick your field? What drew you to that?
I don't know. Maybe it was, I think, the hardest, I think. General surgery. I always wanted to do surgery for sure. Uh-huh. My dad was a urologist, and I thought that I would do that. Maybe going into med school, that's probably what I was leaning more towards. But it seemed that they didn't do as much surgery or open surgery. Mm-hmm. Their field is, even though they do a lot of, they do some open surgery, that the field seemed to have been replaced by a lot of endoscopic procedures that don't require cutting and everything. But in general surgery, just there was a difference in the amount of, you know, operating that you did, and, you know, the types of surgeries that you did. And I like to work with my hands and everything. And what I always liked about medicine was, I guess, anatomy and the hands-on approach and everything. And I always liked that. And surgery, I thought, was the best entry. And then for general surgery, that's just, you know, I think that you know, there's trauma, there's which I do a lot of, is, you know, trauma surgery, which, you know, operating on people with gunshot wounds and things like that. Oh, so those are, you know, I always just wanted to be a part of that. And I think it, you know, it takes a lot of discipline and everything. And, you know, and then bariatric surgery was just, most people will specialize, and it's good to have a specialty. I do bariatric surgery, which is weight loss surgery, but that is general surgery. I mean, that's just, you know, most people who do it have done an extra year of training, but that is just, you know, that's a, you know, a couple, you know, additional operations and, you know, an additional field of knowledge that we use to help people lose weight. But it's still very much, you know, falls within the principles of general surgery.
Do we have a lot of that here in the Acadiana region?
You mean
bariatric?
Bariatric, yeah. I have two partners, Dr. Dennis Eshte and Dr. Philip Gotchesan, and they were here before. You know, Dr. Gotchesan started the practice here, and then there they all. I think that there's a surgeon performing the operation at Leward's as well, or bariatric surgery. But so I think there's probably four general or bariatric surgeons in town, and I'm one of them. And but I do a lot of general surgery as well, and my partners do as also. So we are still doing colons and lumps and bumps and hernias and colon surgery, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, let's talk about you guys. You moved back here, and both coming back from New York City. What was it, Claire, I'm assuming for you it's family too, but what drew you back to your hometown?
Well, I think it's interesting how lives are very, you know, you can be on a separate path, but when you join with your partner, like, suddenly there's new possibility ahead. And I think, like, for me, Lafayette was always a great place to come from, and my family was still here. But I wasn't quite sure that I was ready to come home, or felt like there was momentum growing for me in New York. But when Robert and I ended up getting married, it felt like you start sharing ideas and there's a true collaboration in what you want your life to look like. And I think that we would really spend so much time living in Brooklyn looking, like when I called you, like looking at, ooh, what's the real estate in Lafayette look like? Or there's all of these peers, people that we went to college that are starting new businesses or starting organizations. And you could just tell, even from living far away, you could really just tell that there was such this sense of potential and this youthful sense of possibility and energy. And I think we both just felt like, okay, we really have a desire to be a part of that because we believe the community is so special to us. Mm-hmm. And also we've been away for a while. So you feel like, well, I've learned a lot being away and I'm always still learning, but if I could contribute or share some of what I've learned to make the community more evolved, then I want to do that, you know?
Yeah. We always hear anecdotal, you know, evidence or stories about people leaving Acadiana and then wanting to come home, and you kind of exemplify that. I'm just delighted that you're both here. And Claire, again, let's follow up with you. You did bring depth. You taught in New York City. If you can tell us your experience, you worked on the major stage and you trained with Alvin Ailey Studios.
I did a lot of various training. I did my Master's of Fine Arts at NYU at the Tisch School of the Arts and their dance program. Mm-hmm. So those were the first 2 years that I moved to New York. That was like my kind of most rigorous training program. And then I really started doing a lot of choreography, which is, I love performing, but for me, choreography is really a passion and sort of that deep love. And I was really fortunate to be able to start to produce my own work and work with a lot of different artistic collaborators. I really enjoy collaborating across disciplines, so not just dance, but creating dances with writers or with composers, with visual artists. So you're really tapping into like a multidisciplinary experience. One of the more noteworthy experiences that I had in New York was I got to work very closely with Susan Stroman, who's a Broadway Tony-winning choreographer.
Wow.
And I spent a few years working on the Broadway show Bullets Over Broadway on the lab, which is sort of like the workshop before it goes to Broadway. Mm-hmm. And then I had the really wonderful opportunity to restage the Broadway choreography for the national tour. So it was a really cool job, I mean, obviously, but that job was what I was doing in New York when we decided to move home. So it was really cool because the first 6 months that we moved home, it was almost once a month, I would be on the road again, checking up on the show or, you know, putting in a new dancer. So it really provided this wonderful transition period
for
me.
For you.
Because it felt like I was still very connected to my New York community. And but at the same time, it gave me a chance to really start to understand what was happening in Lafayette and sort of where those gaps were and where I felt like I could most contribute. Right. And so it was at the end of that national tour, which was summer of 2016, that I felt like I made a conscious choice to really root myself here foundationally. Yeah. And then that's when I opened Basin Arts.
Mm-hmm. Do you still travel some with choreography? Or are you still
on contract? I'm not working on any national tours right now. Mm-hmm. The last one I was working on was Finding Neverland in 2017 for a short amount of time. But I could see that Basin Arts was really growing and there was so much responsibility, but also passion behind that for me. And so I made a choice to stay here. But I do take projects. Like I was in New York for a couple weeks in December and I'm developing a new musical with two collaborators, one from South Africa and one from Australia. So there's still like bubbling ups of new projects, but I'm a little bit more choosy about the traveling these days. Yeah.
Now, Robert, I look at cooking and culinary arts as, you know, it's artistic.
Oh, and more than dance sometimes. Well,
I'm fascinated with your story in that you're, you know, a successful surgeon and you seem just as comfortable behind, you know, like a stove. Yeah. I really enjoyed watching some of the videos you've posted showing how to make the best BLT and the love. I mean, it's humorous and yet it's, you just make people want to come to the Superette and try out things. Can you talk about what got you to invest in the superette? And have you always liked cooking?
Yeah. Well, Claire was talking earlier about how we used to look at real estate and everything in town and areas that we liked and what we thought we can do to kind of get involved and, you know, make a difference and, you know, where we want to live. But also, earlier in my career, in my training when I was younger, yeah, I never thought I would do anything besides surgery.
You didn't have any time.
You know, even when I was a kid, I always wanted to be a doctor and I didn't really consider being a chef or anything. I knew that I liked to cook and I always enjoyed it. And as it turns out, a lot of doctors like to cook. A lot of them, you know, after this, people see my videos and a lot of the doctors in the doctor's lounge tell me about the things that they make and with how they cook and all that. And a lot of them seem to be, you know, very good chefs, I guess. And
good with their hands.
And they just, you know, so a lot of people like to cook and doctors are no different.
Especially here.
You know, yeah. So I used to come in town and look at the, you know, just try different recipes and cook for the whole family because I have a huge bunch of cousins and sisters and you know, we all used to get together and I would like to put on a big, you know, just cook a lot for everybody. And but looking at, you know, when I saw the superette was for sale, I was already kind of mentally prepared to maybe buy it. But I think that, you know, I always wanted a place, you know, it'd be like if Judy Sin went for sale and, you know, knew that you always loved the place and you just wanted to pounce and get it. Like, by the time that I saw that it was for sale, I was really like kind of primed already because I'd thought so much about, you know, buying a like a place that maybe have, you know, a plate lunch business or something in Lafayette, but in that area and particularly Freetown, you know. So, and I bought a rental house from the lady who I bought the superette from sold me a rental, like a house that I use, you know, as an Airbnb. It's just next door to the superette, but, you know, she told me, she's like, you need to buy the superette. And I was like, well, that's not practical. I can't buy the superette now. I mean, how am I going to do that?
Just out of school.
She was like, I'm telling you, you need to buy it. So then sure enough, later, my cousin Rex Morrow, who's a realtor in town, he hooked me up with a guy named Toby Rodriguez, who was a boucherie man and everything. So we got together and, you know, Toby was very interested in the superette and everything. And, you know, we talked and we decided that we would open a restaurant together and he would handle more of the food. And well, I mean, he would be the food and manager guy and I would be the, you know, I bought the real estate, that was, you know, but we were partners in the restaurant. So we sort of had divided responsibilities. Mine were more, I guess I was content at that time just to be involved, I mean, more than vicariously, but I was more like, I was not the chef and I was not the, you know, manager or anything like that.
You've got a day job.
Right, right. But with time, you know, I realized I couldn't afford not to do it my way. You know, so it's just, you know, people say partnerships in business often don't work. And I think the best way to lose your money is to, you know, buy a restaurant.
Like a marriage.
Right. So, you know, so but I realized that, you know, nothing against my old partner, but, you know, I realized that I had to do it differently. And, you know, so we closed it. And after a month of it being closed, I had some other, you know, people wanted to rent the place because this place is very unique. Yeah. It looks beautiful from the outside and inside.
Street.
It's just a great spot. But I decided that it was time for me to do it. Mm-hmm. I realized the reason why I bought it is because I wanted to be in the restaurant business. And so my old partner, or the old owner, or the former owner, she wouldn't like for me to call her old because she's not old, Ms. Lynn Darenthal. She decided that she would open it up again with me, and from there we just started back to the basics,
and then
from then on, then I started to bring in my food and my recipes, and you know, I basically left the plate lunches to her, but the in the hamburgers, that was her old recipe. She won't let me change that or anything, and that's okay because I love her food, and if I didn't like it, I would change it. But you know, I started, you know, making my own sausage, making my own bacon, smoking my own roast beef for the you know, we didn't have much of a po' boy game going on, so now I have delicious po' boys with long lettuce bread and you know, all the meats are, you know, homemade, and you know, we pound out the chicken fries. I mean, everything's homemade now, you know, the biscuits. I mean, we don't make our own white bread, but we don't make our own buns, but we make our own biscuits. All the meats that go on your sandwiches is homemade.
When do you do this? When do you have time?
Well, you know, we don't have kids yet, so we I go in before and after work, and you
and
know,
when you do, they'll probably be working
most of what
at the superette.
Yeah, most
that,
of what
that
I do
would
is,
help.
I train you know my staff to do what they can, but most of the stuff is the meat has to be brined and prepared, and smoked. So I mean, the brining and all that stuff, I do that myself, and. But, you know, the smoker, I can, like, kind of start that before work, and then Miss Lynn can check, you know, I've taught them how to, you know, check the temperature. Yeah, we I built a smokehouse, you know.
Oh, you
so, yep. So, you know, to smoke all the meat. And so Miss Lynn, you know, they'll go and add wood chips and everything and check the temperature, and it works out fine. You know, it's not that complicated, really.
Right.
It never really feels like work, except for when you have to get certain products out, and it's kind of late at night, and you got to get, you know, the customers, you can't not have certain things. But it's a lot of fun, and I think that the customers are. I definitely find that the customers are starting to respond to the you know, the specialty meats that we not only sell in our sandwiches, but that we sell behind the counter. You know,
where do you source the meats and all? Is this local?
I get most of my pork from the Eunice Superette, and which is in it's interesting. It's named the Superette as well, but the Eunice Superette, it's a wholesaler in Eunice, and I either, if I feel like taking a ride, I'll go pick up the meat, or they'll just deliver it. Mm-hmm. And
in your spare time
for most of it. Yeah Sometimes you need to go take a ride, and I like to do that. But
so Claire, did you have any idea when you kind of fell in love with this guy that, you know, he'd be owning the Superette and practicing medicine?
Yes and no. I feel that Robert has always been an amazing cook, lucky for me.
Right.
And so...
Although you don't look like you eat very much.
Oh, but his food is amazing. So I definitely knew that that was a passion. Mm-hmm. And I think it's cool when we moved home because, like Robert was saying, I think you sort of have these ideas about what you imagine is possible. And maybe sometimes living in a larger city, it's hard to do a lot of things. So you kind of have to be really specific. But coming back to Lafayette, you realize like there is a lot of possibility and potential in this community, but there's also ways that you can do a few different things.
Mm-hmm.
It's challenging at times, but I mean, I think when we moved home, we really both, we were sounding boards for each other 100% in terms of just brainstorming about ideas for an art center, brainstorming about ideas for a restaurant, and what are like... Do these things coexist? I don't know if they do. So then it would be like, okay, you know, but I mean, I feel like at one point it was like, okay, could you have dance classes next to eggs? I don't know. Maybe you could, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that we've definitely been great sounding boards. And so I'm so excited because I think that from day one for our relationship, it's always been about having separate but really specific shared ideas around a passion.
Yeah.
And so it's no surprise to me that our lives in some ways were maybe for this community like unconventional. I don't know, it feels pretty normal to me, but at the same time it's very logical because we both are very passionate people and we have the amazing opportunity to be able to spend our days full of doing things that we love and like being connected really deeply into the community that we love. So
never a dull moment.
Yeah, no, never, never.
You're so supportive of each other from what I've gathered. When you were looking for a space for Basin Arts, I know you like the downtown area, the Freetown area. You chose downtown.
Yeah,
for
that
your
for me was
Basin
like
Arts.
A no-brainer because downtown is such the epicenter of the arts and culture are so present there. And in terms of Basin Arts is so much about a container for creativity, being a hub and a home for artists and helping them to fulfill their potential. So it felt like that was a definite space and a definite location that felt really important to be in that center.
I enjoyed your interview with Brennan Robidoux. And on the interview, he does I don't know if he's still doing the podcast,
Showtime, yes.
But for anybody that wants to hear an in-depth interview by you, Claire, I really recommend it. But in the interview, she was commending you, Robert, for being a good sounding board for the name, first of all, for Basin Arts, a basin being a collective that allows things to pass through. It was beautiful the way you described how you came up with the name.
That was another sounding board moment. Yeah. We spent a lot of time naming things is really hard.
But it's so important.
But it's so important because it's what you lead with. Mm-hmm. And Basin Arts has really been such a... It's exactly what you just said. It's this idea that ideas can come in and they can be contained for as long as they need to be fostered. But then the whole goal is that it flows back out into the community to reach someone else, to teach someone something, to share a new idea. But it's a cycle, you know?
Right.
People come in and come out with something to give and something to gain.
Well, you've brought so much to our community with the level of instruction and choreography that Basin Arts and, of course, your collective brings. Would you like to talk about that some, about you know, what's
sure.
going on this
I mean,
year. We're here in early 2019. What's
well,
what's
a
going
big
on at this
moment
point?
For Basin Arts is at the end of 2018, we finalized and received our nonprofit status.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. So if you're not in the nonprofit world, it maybe that means not very much, but it's a long journey of paperwork and really, I think, as it should be, because when you become a nonprofit, you really are opening your organization up to the community in a formal way. So that was a big part of the latter half of the year for us. So we're really excited in 2019 to be fully like engaging with that programming and with the community and seeking out more people to become supporters
it'll be
in
a
our
lot
programming
easier to raise money
and financially, but also just like as board members and as volunteers and just kind of expanding our reach. And a lot of people, like, what is so cool about Basin Arts is we do so many different things. So depending upon what your knowledge of Basin Arts is sometimes dependent upon the type of art that you often engage with. But we have like a full visual arts, we have a gallery every month we show at Art Walk. We have visual arts classes. We have a new program, which is actually the first project that the Superette and Basin Arts are collaborating on.
Eggs and dance.
So this is through our visual arts program, but we have a new program that we launched just at the very end of last year called the Bare Walls Program. And it's an art subscription program that pairs local artists with local businesses.
Oh.
So any business in the community that has bare walls, so, you know, you move into a new office space or you have a big office space and you don't have, I'm looking
Raider
at
Solutions.
All of the bare walls at Raider Solutions.
No, I don't see any
wink,
art.
Wink, wink. Yeah. No, but it's art is expensive. Yes. But at the same time, it can make a space feel so much more inhabitable and so much more creative and exciting. Mm-hmm. And on from the business side, that's like a real asset and an investment. But there are so many, on the other side, there are so many amazing visual artists in this community that just don't have a platform to keep their work up consistently. Or there are many community spaces that are having like cafes that say, oh, you can hang your work here.
Right.
But there's no return on investment. And so artists are always working for exposure, but exposure doesn't always pay the rent.
Right.
So we've created this program where we are creating a giant database and an online portfolio of local artists, and then businesses can sign up for the program.
Uh-huh.
And it's a very, there we have like a bunch of different tiers, but it's super affordable. The lowest subscription is like $100 a month, but you get like almost 10 feet of art.
Oh, wow.
And then the coolest part about the program is that every 3 months you can change out the art. So you get to constantly reinvigorate your space. But the biggest part for us is it's creating direct relationships. So the Superette is joining the program because they have a giant restaurant with no art.
Perfect place to display the art.
And so Robert was able to select, we have a lot of different aesthetics, but that we have a lot of like landscapes and sort of like Louisiana-centric art.
You can choose
so
the
he
type.
Chose the aesthetic. Art. And then as part of the program, we Basin Arts and Bare Walls will curate different activities. So we might have like an artist breakfast where the artist could come and patrons could meet the artist or have some sort of art education experience for your employees. So it's just all in that relationship building scenario. So that's a big part of our early year is just kind of spreading the word about Bare Walls.
And then you're really teaching people about art.
Yeah, you know, it's all about
the artist
communicating
and the
process and increasing value, for sure.
That's great. Gosh. I know you also partner in the community. I was reading that you had a teaching residency at Myrtle Place. That there's so much that you do giving back to the community. You've put on workshops at Acadiana Cares, one of my favorite.
That's a wonderful facility. Yeah, we've done a couple of years of workshops where we'll do a full day of movement work with
therapy,
the residents.
Huh?
Yeah, and it's a wonderful way to tap into personal identity and personal story as a road to recovery.
Right.
And at Myrtle Place, this is a new program. We're almost at the end of it. It's been a 6-month artistic residency in the school. And it's called Movement and Mindfulness. So we've worked with the school to build a curriculum that we go into each classroom. There's 17 classrooms. Little people. We go in every other week and we work on ideas of mindfulness as it relates to focus and, you know, self-care and confidence and compassion and kindness, things like that. Mm-hmm. But we use like meditative practices, but also a lot of movement because little people don't like to sit still all the time.
They like it?
It's been really successful, uh-huh. and it's been a really fun journey to work on with the school.
And you've also worked, I'm just looking, you collaborate with Katie Anna's Symphony on Runaway Dish.
Yeah, we
now, that's
did a
been a success.
Big project with Runaway Dish in 2017 mm-hmm. called mm-hmm. Stir. And actually, that, I'm looking at Robert, but that came out of, I think I moved here, and for a year I looked around in all of the different artistic disciplines and realized that ultimately people care more about food some days than they do about dance, certainly.
Most days.
Yeah, most days.
Well, they like both, but
yeah,
food
right.
is front
but it,
center.
I mean that in jest, but the idea of partnering with something that is literally on the tip of people's tongues. Mm-hmm. They understand food. There's a creativity that people can experience immediately when you taste a dish or you talk to a chef. People here love food. Mm-hmm. So if you could, pair that idea of creative process and how it feels to taste something that you love to eat. And the guiding question for Stir was, what if you could taste a dance? Oh. So we paired chefs with choreographers and we commissioned five new dance works. And at the show at the ACA, you were seeing the new dance. And then you were also, the chefs created these really uniquely crafted bites. And so you were tasting the dance as you watched the dance.
Man.
But it was really a fun, it was such a fun partnership.
It was a big success.
Yeah,
you teach classes too, right? Just to individuals, or you have group classes?
I teach class at Basin Arts, a couple of classes a week, mostly to mm-hmm. the dance company, but they're all open to the public.
But the public can sign up.
And then I teach at UL in the dance uh-huh. department.
Do you like to dance, Robert?
I'm not really. You know, she knows that. I mean, I'll Cajun dance a little bit. You know, if I have enough. You know,
I dance enough in my job, so it's okay.
I mean, I don't. It's not. No, I didn't. I wouldn't say that. I mean, I will dance sometimes. You know.
Yeah, it's okay. I don't like steak, so it's fair.
Yeah. Drink. I'll dance. You know. But I'm not a dancer. I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't have that talent.
That's funny. I want to move back to Robert, but before we do, how can people find you with Basin Arts? What's a good way to find out more information?
Our website is basinartslafayette.com. That's always a great resource. And we have a very active social media presence, so you can follow Basin Arts or Basin Dance Collective on Instagram mm-hmm. or on Facebook.
Right. Now, Robert, a couple of things before we start winding down. You have become a business man. I mean, you've become an investor in downtown. And I saw you in the paper the other day when the Vermilion Lofts were breaking ground. Everybody, I think, has been watching that with interest. Mm-hmm. Stephen Artigo's project, bringing in a mixed-use facility with, 24 residences?
And 24 residences and commercial space downstairs.
Commercial space, and that's on East Vermilion where the Leather Pouch used to be.
That's right, corner of Johnson and Vermilion.
Yeah, what a great location for all kinds of people, young business people.
It's only a block away from Basin Arts,
right,
which is great too.
Mm-hmm. And close to the Super Ad. I mean, people
can
ride
two blocks,
their bike.
Really? Yeah. 2 blocks from the Super Ad.
Yeah. Awesome to activate that side of downtown. Yeah.
And then you've also invested in Spoonville, mm-hmm. which is the old filling station.
Yeah.
And so tell me about that if you have a few minutes. Just are you looking to branch out or just opportunities?
Yeah, I just want to be clear with the Spoonbill restaurant. That's really, you know, Adam Lofton is mm-hmm. I would call the architect of that business engagement. He, him and Stephen Verrett and Chef Jeremy Connor were the three main guys involved in that. You know, Jeremy Connor is the chef, and Stephen Verrett is the, front of house manager, mm-hmm. and Adam is a real estate investor. So it really goes down to relationships in Lafayette. Yeah. I mean, you know, I knew these people. In fact, it's funny. So I think that Stephen, I heard him talking at a party one time, and you know, about just overheard that he was looking at the Super Et, and I was interested in buying it. And, you know, so we talked and kind of just were talking about that, and I was like, well, man, I'd love to. What if, you know, I'd buy this Super Et, and y'all would, you know, come in there, you know? So we just, and that didn't exactly. It's not that we didn't go that far, but we mm-hmm. there was an introduction and we got to know each other. And of course, have lots of mutual friends, and I got to know Chef Jeremy Connor through various things as well.
And Jeremy was a chef for the Stir Project.
Okay. Yeah,
so,
and
small role.
You know, and then Adam is just, you know, Adam goes back to, you know, we were friends from New York, from who's married to Maren Rosen, who's a Lafayette girl.
So. Yeah.
You know, so he asked if I wanted to invest in that, and I always know, I you know, when I. like many people, I'm sure, that when I saw that the filling station was closing, mm-hmm. you think, you know, anyone would think, man, what an opportunity, yeah. you know. And so I was very pleased whenever he came to me to mm-hmm. talk about, you know, the opportunity to invest in that. So that was an easy decision. And but, you know, that I have no control over that. I'm just an investor, just like, and like there are other investors. And
yeah, but y'all are making things turn around downtown.
Yeah. And, you know, but I have no control or anything like that. So I'm just, you know, I don't cook over there or anything like that. But the Vermilion Loft, that's, you know, Stephen Artigo, I got to know him through. He's, you know, so a program that I'd like to get more involved with is Cotafil, but my uncle, Jimmy DiMaggio, is involved in Cotafil.
Y'all are both so well connected. You know, well, between your families,
my uncle Jimmy told me that I should meet with Stephen Artigo, but I knew who Stephen was because he was a state representative, right. And you know, I knew who he was. But anyway, he said we should talk, so I just called him, mm-hmm. and you know, he told me about Vermilion Loft, which I think, you know, it helps me as a business owner in Freetown to have more residents. I think that's what we need the most downtown is residents, because
it's going to bring more stores and more retail.
Well, yeah, I think the restaurants do well. Popular, kind of trendy restaurants mm-hmm. are doing well downtown, among others. But I think maybe perhaps some of the retail places might not be thriving as much. But I think what they need is people who live nearby to go
24/7.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that would definitely help me out in the Superette to mm-hmm. have more, you know, people living nearby. And so that was also a no-brainer as well, you know. And it's going to be, I was pleased to see how many people were out at the groundbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looked like a good turnout.
It was. And
but, you know, it's always a lot of government people were there, and I love mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
But it's private dollars that are making these things happen.
Right.
We need to remember that it takes people that are willing to take a risk to invest and and make projects take place. So, mm-hmm. yeah. I see Jason Sikora. We're taping at Raider Solutions today. And Jason, you've been really writing.
I've got all sorts of questions.
Oh, okay. I'm always thinking of things that are going right.
Well, I actually just have a few questions. I want to start with you, Robert. First of all, thank you both for being here. I appreciate this.
Thanks for having us.
So I know a few general surgeons through mm-hmm. either my wife or Chris Rader, my own medical things, and you guys have a very, very unique mind and the way you think about things. And I've noticed that with each surgeon, when they want to learn something about something, whether it's we wanted to raise chickens, we talked to a general surgeon who had chickens because they knew all about it.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah you do. Or even if you want to buy a TV, talk to a general surgeon because they did all the research ahead of time before they bought that TV. So it doesn't surprise me that you started a restaurant and mm-hmm. that you own a restaurant, being that you had a medical background, but now you're running a restaurant and cooking.
Yeah.
So it was like no surprise. Like, oh, of course, that's what he's going to do. He's going to learn all about that. But was there something about that you eventually learned that you weren't prepared for?
Yeah. There's still plenty that I'm not prepared for.
Okay.
You know, people come to me with suggestions all the time about how I could better run my business. Of course, those are always welcome. No, but you know, there's plenty. I mean, I still have much to. You know, the place is not where. I mean, it's where I want it to be, but there's more that I would like to do there. And some of that just has to do with I think that, you know, hiring is something. I'm the hiring process, I think, is a difficult. I put out a Facebook, you know, search, and like that wasn't too fruitful. I hired somebody. If you're listening, you shouldn't do that. But you know, I hired somebody. He didn't show up for work the following day. So yeah, you know.
Oh,
anyway,
yeah.
He seemed like a good hire. Anyway, I hope you're listening right now. You can come back on. Maybe I'll give you another. No, probably not.
I've read articles about that people just don't even call. They just don't come back.
Yeah, I just didn't come back. But anyway, I mean, I am looking for someone now to kind of do some of the things that I do there, because, you know, like I said, I do a lot of the meat preparation, but I mm-hmm. you know, I make the boudin, you know, make the sausage and all that kind of stuff. But it's kind of physical, so you know, you got to be able to lift and do that, and have an understanding of cooking and smoking and that type of thing. I don't think it's that hard, you know, like hiring and everything, and just you got to be ready to. You know, the Superette is kind of what I like about it. It's not your typical operation, and that's clear when you walk in the place. I mean, it's a laid back feel. Mm-hmm. Things are done much like. You know, it's not like the way it is like in your own home, but I mean, it's, you know, it's just, it's kind of a blast from the past, and it's a little bit, you know, slower paced and everything. And I like that, but you have to, you know, it's cliche, but you have to be prepared to handle everything. And I think perhaps if I don't like to make too many illusions, you know, from surgery and running a restaurant. But there's one thing is that you have to take responsibility for your place. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, you certainly have to do that with surgery, is to take the ultimate responsibility for your patients and not, you can rely on others, but in the end it falls on you. And that's one thing that you have to understand when you have a business, really, not only a restaurant, but, you know, the bills have to be paid, the employees have to be paid, and you have to have your supplies and that type of thing. So, you know, I guess
that's a lot of juggling though between your full-time practice of medicine and payroll and
absolutely
all the state regulations, staying code. I mean, there's a lot.
Yes, indeed.
Is there something about just general surgery that people don't know or just take for granted that?
Well, things like your general surgery, what's your specialty? And it's like, general surgery is a specialty. I don't mind really. I'm not one to, you know, that I know that doesn't particularly bother me. But no, I think a lot of people don't know what it is. A lot of your best friends don't really know what you do. So I guess the things that people know most about is, you know, if they're hanging out with me and I'm on trauma call, I have to leave to go handle like a trauma situation. So the people understand that, you know, I think that, you know, if you, you know, operate on gunshots and things like that. But the rest of it, I guess, to put it most simply, most general surgeons tend to focus on the gastrointestinal tract and fix hernias and other lumps and bumps and things like that.
Like appendix?
Appendix, gallbladder, stomach.
Emergency type of...
emergency or non-emergent, you know, hernias or, you know, and, you know, things like that.
Yeah. So. I think, could I chime in?
Certainly,
So I mean, I'm always impressed and, like, I guess inspired or motivated, because I think that most people don't appreciate like the art of improvisation that surgery requires. Mm-hmm. But like in the arts, you might deal with improvisation in dance or in theater and acting, like where you're sort of making choices in the moment. Yeah. And there's a sense of liveliness in that, like, ooh, what's it going to be next? What's it going to be next? And that feeds your creativity. But sometimes I step back and I'm doing that all the time in the arts. And then Robert comes home and I'm realizing like he did that all day long, but when lives are on the line. And that, it sort of blows my mind because he's so cool, calm, and collected. Mm-hmm. And then he'll come home and we'll just cook dinner. And then like as we're cooking, you know, like he's like, I did this today, or like I worked on this case, it was challenging. He never tells me the names, so just for HIPAA, just saying that.
Yeah.
But it's like we just talk shop, like, I had this meeting today, I taught this class, I did this surgery. And then like sometimes I think about that, especially when you're on call and like come home in the middle of the night and you've just done 2 hours worth of really intense improv, basically.
Yeah.
And it's kind of just wild how much art goes into choice making in a surgical procedure in the
beautiful.
Same way that it would be, you know, on the stage.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I like that. Yeah. So, Claire, kind of the same question for you, but I'm going to make it a double question. Something about dance and the discipline of dance that people don't know about, and then advice for somebody who wants to get into dance and make a career out of it.
Sure. Well, the discipline of dance, I think, if you're really passionate about it, especially around here, this kind of answers both questions, but it takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of focus, and it takes your body on a toll. So I think that the longevity factor really depends upon self-care and like taking care of your body, doing recovery after you're in an intense rehearsal period, making sure you know, stretch your muscles, or you eat healthy, or you get enough rest. And I think it's such also a discipline in which we see in this community most young people doing it, but sort of like a big part of moving home was realizing that after 17, 18 years old, once people were dancing, you know, 10 hours a day in high school, there was nowhere for them to continue training or really develop like that artistry part of it. And so that's a population that I'm really passionate about, is that post high school, college, post college, like early professional chapter, because I felt like I remember being that person at 17 going to college and having no idea that dance was a choice for me professionally. And also having no peers to be able to understand that, like, I'm not going to XYZ social function because I have rehearsal.
Yeah.
Or I'm not going to go on spring break because I am in rehearsal. You know, so I think by continuing, if you're a young dancer, to remind yourself that, like, if this is something you're passionate about, your creativity is like currency. If you don't use it, you lose it in a sense. Right. But at the same time, like if you don't use it, you might not feel wholly like yourself. So you shouldn't discount that. Like you really mm-hmm. have to invest in it as yeah. currency for your livelihood.
My daughter, my youngest, is at LSU, and she has a roommate, Emily McConnell, who is a she's a ballet. She's in ballet and still active, and I think studying to be a doctor, hopefully. Cool. But it's the discipline that you both have is amazing. And when I see that in young people, it's so admirable, because it's so easy to go to college and just get distracted, blown away by the parties and whatever, you know.
Yeah, and
just
I
have
think,
a good time, and they lose
their, a little bit of that.
Yeah,
we had to do a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah. Especially if you hang out with Rex Mora. Yeah.
I think it's just telling, like, kind of, I always tell my students at UL this, like, you get in any career you're going to do, like, you step forward into that mm-hmm. path because you obviously have an excitement or a passion about it. But then, like, it's okay to keep checking in, because not everyone in the world, if you, like, dance and you started as a young dancer, is going to become a professional dancer. Not everyone who likes mm-hmm. medicine is going to become a doctor. But you just have to keep that dialogue open with yourself to keep saying, okay, well, this is getting harder. Is it still worth it to me? And if the answer is yes, well, then know that it's worth the discipline to do it. Like, right. it is still worth it. Keep going, you know?
Right. Right.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, both, for being here. And thank you, Jan, for allowing me to ask some questions.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
What a wonderful partnership you both have. Dr. Robert Otan and Claire Cook. Do you go by Claire Otan? Or
I go by you? All, whoever uh-huh. answers or calls me Cook or Otan, I answer
all right.
to both.
Well, Claire
yes.
and Robert, I want to thank you both for making time. I know that you're on call a lot, and I just was so glad we could get you both in the studio at Raider Solutions at the same time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a real pleasure hearing your story. And I'd like to thank again Jason with Raider Solutions, our sponsor, Lafayette Convention and Visitors Commission, and our newest sponsor, Iberia Bank, who we'll be hearing more about on an upcoming podcast. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, I'm Jan Swift. Thank you for listening.